Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Chancellor of all the Germans, Olaf Scholz, to the White House. Biden and German leader meet at White House and push for Ukraine aid, reads the headline in the New York Times. The message came as congressional lawmakers were working on a package with billions in assistance. The package is now confirmed by the U.S. Senate. However, because it must also pass the U.S. House, it is unlikely at this moment for what we know is in the package. Most importantly, Olaf Scholz, the leader of Germany's coalition, goes home with good headlines, but then large questions about not only Ukraine, but also the German economy struggling nearly 2 years since the invasion of Ukraine by Russia and the cutoff of Russian energy. Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe, a online that you can register for and receive the best thinking in the EU, joins me now to comment on Scholz's visit to the White House, how it was heard in Germany, and especially those energy prices 2 years into the war. Judy, a very good evening to you. As I understand it, energy is the major factor for companies making decisions about continuing to do business in Germany, and also about the question of the manufacturing center reviving. You've done very well with a patchwork of coal and liquefied natural gas, and yet the prices remain high. Good day to you, Judy.
Good day, John, and thank you for having me on your show. Well, you certainly hit at the most sensitive aspect of the German economy and its Achilles heel, and it is energy. And actually, there's no need actually to keep saying that, oh, Germany is now weaned off Russian gas. Renewables are on the increase. What is the structural problem is the pricing of energy. Let me give you an example. It costs 7 or 8 cents production to for electricity, and because of the war in Ukraine, the energy companies really capitalized on this, and now they are charging the consumer about 30 cents per kilowatt hour, which is an extraordinary profit for them. That's the one side. On the other side, because of these extraordinary differences between the production and the consumer prices, the government is now subsidizing, heavily subsidizing households to actually invest in renewable energy. And they are giving huge subsidies to companies because they're facing huge energy costs. And yet, at the root of the problem is the companies reaping so many big profits, and the government won't step in this. So it's a bizarre situation, and these bottlenecks and all these complaints, and companies would not be moving out of Germany if they knew there was reliable, cheap energy. The energy is there. The good price isn't, because this is a huge political and lobby situation.
Yes. Now, let us speak to the political situation. Germany has a coalition government, which means that Olaf Scholz must work with the Greens, with the Christian Lindner, the leader of the Treasury Department, the Minister of Finance, and lesser parties are included in the conversation. But the Social Democrats have been losing ground to a new party, Alternative for Deutschland. I believe there's even another new party, perhaps Communist. There's another new party, perhaps right wing. But let's concentrate on the Alternative for Deutschland doing very well in state elections. Does Alternative for Deutschland have a criticism of the chancellor? Does it have an energy position to accompany its rise in the polling?
Indeed, it does. And what the AfD is doing is linking the high energy prices to the whole inability of the government to explain the politics of climate change. Climate change and the switch over to renewables costs time, it costs money, and it costs communication. And Olaf Scholz is an incredibly poor communicator. And even his economy minister, who's quite popular and is in charge of climate change and these issues, he doesn't explain actually that dealing with the climate costs money. And so the AfD is capitalizing on this, it's capitalizing on the war, it's capitalizing on migration issues, it's capitalizing on energy costs, it's capitalizing on inflation. And frankly, it has a resonance with the public, with large sections of the public, which is why the AfD is doing so well, particularly in Eastern German states, but also in parts of West Germany. And if Olaf Scholz and his coalition actually spoke up and took serious leadership, it might be able to turn around the whole situation, especially in terms of the opinion polls.
The question of energy also connects to the commitment of Germany and other states in the European Union towards the green goals of set in recent meetings in Paris in 2015 and subsequently. Is there rethinking of the green goals? Is that also going on simultaneously with the war and with the rise of Alternative for Deutschland?
Well, let's separate out these things. The war, in some ways, is independent of the green issue. The Green Deal and the climate conferences, which were in Paris and then were in Egypt, and they're going to be in Azerbaijan at the end of 2024, and they're about global consensus on how to reduce the carbon emissions and reduce the degradation of the climate. This is the first thing. But now, because of farmers' disputes, farmers' demonstrations against all these new regulations and how you deal with your fertilizers, how you deal with your land, the cost of diesel, the cost of tractors, the way of doing life, and these are all coming together. Climate change has a particular element of bringing all various opposition, obstinate, annoyed, disenfranchised, or voters that feel we are not being explained what is at stake here. And so this is coming together, and of course this feeds into the AfD. The war in Ukraine is a little bit different. The fatigue hasn't actually set in yet, but there's something out there, well, we're giving so much money to Ukraine, you know, what about us lot who can't afford our energy bills? It's out there, but it hasn't been articulated yet.
I can't tell, Judy, from this distance, is Olaf Scholz facing a general election? Is he likely to lose confidence of his coalition and have to go to the polls?
John, your question is probably similar to what the Europeans ask about, you know, how can a president resign or how does he give over office? The protocols and procedures for a vote of no confidence are very complicated. And the procedures for a chancellor to say, I've had enough, it's absolutely procedural because of the Weimar Republic, because of what happened in the 1930s. It's very legalistic and constitutional. My impression is, unless there's a major crisis, actually there's a crisis quite a lot of the time, he will soldier on till the next election.
I see. So we must discuss Ukraine then momentarily, because we're coming to the second anniversary, if that's what we can call it, memory of this blow. Is the public's opinion changing about Ukraine? Certainly it is here in the United States, and it would make sense that it would echo through the NATO countries. How is it right now in Berlin?
It's in Berlin, if you're talking about the political establishment and the government, they actually are committed to Ukraine. We don't know what goes on behind the scenes, if they're trying to have any kind of secret negotiations between Russia and Ukraine, but we haven't heard anything of this yet. What is very important is that Trump's extraordinary statements over the past few days, that if NATO countries don't cough up, well, frankly, Russia can do what it damn well likes with these countries, and frankly, the United States isn't going to actually stick to the whole NATO Article 5, when one country's attacked, the other countries will come to their aid. I think this is jolted Germany, and so it should, frankly, but Germany should be actually taking the lead in Europe on European defence, on European security, foreign policy, and of strengthening the European caucus inside NATO, and they are not doing that at the moment.
I acknowledge that Mr. Trump's remarks are bizarre, and that it's very difficult to interpret them. So I won't try, other than the fact that it's irregular to claim that people pay NATO. People pay nothing to NATO. It has to do with budgets and year to year. However, let's look a little closer at this. We've talked before. Is there an alternative for the U.S. leadership in NATO, given the negative headlines about refusing the Ukraine package, refusing, and Trump making remarks about NATO? Is Germany ready to lead NATO? Is France? Is Britain?
Listen, we can't even use that terminology. NATO is the United States. Full stop. NATO is the transatlantic alliance led by the United States. The United States found NATO. It is the US that provides a security guarantee for Europe. So we have to get this into our heads, that without the United States giving the security guarantee and saving NATO, the transatlantic alliance and the West, as we know it, would actually not be there. It would be extremely, radically, fundamentally weakened. This is the first point. Secondly, it's all very well, even for me, to say Olaf Scholz should take a bigger lead in the European Union on security and defence and foreign policy. But in fact, the European Union is not going to get its defence structures together. There isn't an integrated defence. There isn't integrated defence spending. There isn't an integrated defence industry. There's no kind of integrated defence structures at all. And so the EU has to really recognize that NATO is a security guarantee, but what are they going to do if Trump actually wins? My last point on this is that, frankly, this is a no-winner. If Trump said 2% of GDP, all the NATO member states must pay up, and if they paid up to 2%, he would raise it to 5%. I mean, this is purely transactional. He has no feeling for NATO. He doesn't see why America should support its allies. And the Europeans really seriously have to wake up. And with Canada and the rest of the non-EU members that are members of NATO, and collectively should actually strengthen NATO, because the EU is not in a position to do it.
I'm speaking with Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe. She's in Berlin. We're discussing right now Olaf Scholz's visit to the White House and the statements by the President of the United States and the Chancellor of Germany to support Ukraine. That suggests, of course, that the second year anniversary of the war, all of Europe is threatened and at the same time looking for alternatives for the future. The energy shortage is apparent in Germany and its stagnant economy, which is something we have not seen since the Second War. We're going to turn to the very large question of the other person in the conversation at the White House, that is President Biden, and questions raised about his ability to continue in office as a leader of NATO, of the United States, and of the free world. How is that heard in Germany? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply. If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.